This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Iraq's prime minister gives a timetable and Sony in the midst of a payola scandal. Joining us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, along with Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and the Hip-Hop Culture. Also with us, Jeff Obafemi Carr, founding artistic director of the Amen-Ra Theater in Nashville. He joins us from Spotland Productions there. I thank you all for joining us. Let's get right into what we heard this week from the Iraqi prime minister, who is suggesting that he would like to see a U.S. troop withdrawal, and he would like to see it begin what they hope to be a substantial withdrawal of troops, begin by next spring or next summer. Mary Frances Berry, let me ask you, A, do you believe this is believable? And if we are looking at yet another year on the ground, what does this mean to the body count, which seems to be swaying the American public?
Well, to the body count, of course, it means that we will be very upset about people getting killed and injured the longer they stay there, the more likely that is. But the other aspect of this is that the administration has to show some movement of getting troops out of Iraq, whether they come out or not, or take a few out, I think, before next year's congressional elections. And certainly by the end of the administration, they would want all the troops out. They don't want to. In some districts, it's going to be a real issue for congressional candidates. If the troops are still there, the body count is going up, and things still seem to be going badly. So the fundamental question, though, is what's going to happen in Iraq on the ground? We have military people saying that there should be more troops there and that the Iraqis can't handle it themselves, and even more people will get killed. There's a delicate balance here, but I think the administration wants to get out for both the practical and political reasons, but can't figure out a way to do it.
And Jeff, Mary raises the interesting question and the real question of political expedience of this war. And we are going to see many turn their backs on this president and the administration when, quite frankly, their livelihood, political livelihood, will be tied to the voter.
I think that's a prophetic statement, Ed. This takes me back to the other afternoon when I was returning home in the airport from one of the various and sundry trips I'm called out on from time to time. And I was stricken audibly by this piercing, wailing cry. I was kind of alarmed because I thought somebody had been injured, and I turned around to see this older woman who was greeting a fully fatigued soldier who had just come home. She was crying uncontrollably, and I could only imagine her mixture of joy and allayed fear. I say that to say that I don't think anyone, even the most conservative supporters of the Iraqi invasion and occupation, wants to stay in Iraq any longer. However, post-invasion, there are some quandaries there. The Iraqi army has 77,000 soldiers right now. I think they have a goal of about 85,000 by year's end. Police force, 90,000. They need to get near 150,000. And the manpower has to be built to control not only the day-to-day operations, but on both sides with police and military, there's a focus on counterinsurgency. And that's what's going to take place, that the U.S. figures is going to take place. And I think the world knows it's going to take place after Big Brother goes home. So I think we're going to have to, as a country, feel like the mother I saw in the airport. And that statement is, I don't care what happens over there eventually, as long as my baby, in this case, the U.S. military, comes home.
Yvonne, I've continued to use the word quagmire when talking about this war. When one hears this from the Iraqi prime minister, one has to question whether or not this is a true joint statement based on talks between the Iraqi government and the Bush administration in hopes of giving a, quote, timetable, which the Bush administration never wanted to do, or whether or not this is the beginnings of seeing a split between the administration and the government. The government saying, look, you've got a year to get out. And as Jeff already noted, we were hearing from other military folks who were suggesting that there's no way the United States would be able to get out based on the readiness or lack thereof from the government and the military and police forces on the ground there.
I think that actually is probably both a bit of both of those scenarios. I don't think the Iraqis, from what we've heard, really wanted us there from the very beginning. I think that once Saddam Hussein was out of power, their feeling was that, you know, we can handle this, we can take over. That certainly wasn't demonstrated in terms of their military capability or their political infrastructure. But nonetheless, they were not necessarily welcoming and wanting us to remain there indefinitely. And I think domestically, it is a problem that there is waning support for this war. There is a whole contingent of Americans who thought we should have never been there from the very beginning. And even the people who did support it, they're beginning to question as it continues to drag on and drag on and the more American fatalities, when, what is the end point? So I think there has to be a structure where the Iraqis can get us out of there and our politicians can get us out of there and people can save face. I think also, too, what continues to be lacking from this conversation is an issue of what is the benchmark for success. We keep talking about, you know, when we can pull out, when we can pull out, but it never seems to be, from my readings, what that standard would be. So we can't remain there for the next, you know, half a century. At some point, we're going to have to pull out, and we're going to have to let the Iraqis handle their own affairs. And we will step back in, if necessary, under a different set of circumstances.
I'll make one prediction real quick, if I can, and that is that when we pull out, it will not be based on whether or not the situation in Iraq is perfect and stabilized. It will depend upon the political necessity that the administration sees here.
I would agree with that.
That's a good point to be made, yeah.
Right. You know, Jeff, I heard the veteran journalist Bob Schieffer say the other day when talking about and comparing this to the war in Vietnam, that the United States kept asking the wrong question. In Vietnam, and that's whether we were winning, whether we were winning, whether we were winning versus should we be there. And he also went on to say, when you in war have to ask, are you winning? You know that you're not. So that being said, as we look at this, this is the question that tends to creep up here. The question of, you know, should we pull out? Should we pull out? Should we pull out? Are we winning this war versus, as many of us have been saying from day one, should we even be there?
The spiritual question, I think the deeper spiritual implications here are who comes in the question of who actually wins in a war. Is there really a victor? And I think there's not. I think that we are hurt on so many levels. I don't care how many people we destroy. I don't care how many buildings we level. I don't care how many governments we dismantle. There is no clear winner. There's no winner here. The cost in human life, the cost in karmic retribution, you know, in a global sense, politically and spiritually and morally, is too much to count when you talk about invading somebody else's land. So I don't think there is a winner here, and I don't think that there is ever going to be, when we talk about the quote, end quote, war on terror, any clear winners. So I think it is a question of why are we over there, and I think people are going to demand it, as Dr. Barry said.
There was a presumption that we could actually even win the war. I think that what was just alluded to was the fact that war in itself is not about winners and losers. It's a lot of times about just trying to maintain a particular stance.
Well, but for for the architects of war, it is about winning and losing.
Well,
and that's what lay people often miss, though. And those are the people who make those decisions.
What I'm just trying to say, from our standpoint, from the civilian standpoint, we heard the administration give these rationale about, you know, keep war on terrorism. We are all thinking people, or frankly, the majority of thinking people know that that's not really the case. I think that we're going to see residual violence for the foreseeable future. I think that's the reality. Mm-hmm. And I don't think whether we pull it out today, tomorrow, or 5 years from now, it's going to make a difference. I think that, you know, the administration is saving face. They could decide to pull out. We've given billions of dollars to this initiative, and we really haven't seen many results. So, again, as Dr. Barry said, this is not going to be about whether or not Iraq is necessarily stable. This is going to be about when the politicians feel they have to cut and run.
And keep in mind, though, that terrorism has increased since we've been in Iraq.
And that's exactly where I was going, Mary, the idea that this residual violence we are seeing increasing now. And one of the interesting points here, and we talked about this when this name first surfaced and it became official this week, very quietly confirmed, we should note. Karen Hughes, a longtime associate and right hand to President Bush, became Undersecretary of State for public diplomacy and public affairs. And her job is going to essentially be fighting anti-American spirit across the globe and to promote American culture, to also get into intellectual battles, it said, for ideology across the globe, and in particular in the Middle East, of course. Mary Frances Berry, in your opinion, is this the right person? Is this the right face to send to wage this campaign?
Well, she is, by all accounts, an incredibly smart woman politically, being the architect, along with Rove, I guess, of Bush's political success. She doesn't know anything about the Middle East, to my knowledge. There wasn't anything demonstrated in the hearings. She doesn't know, she doesn't speak Arabic, to my knowledge. Maybe she has somebody who will go with her who does. But if she's very, very smart, what she will do is gather around her some moderate Arab scholars and experts and people, and either learn some Arabic or stay away from people who do, and develop a campaign. But I think that the whole thing is silly, because you have to try public diplomacy. Something has to happen more than just making war, and she said that in her testimony very effectively. But in fact, unless we change our policy, I think just, you know, using a PR campaign is not going to change things very much.
I would tend to agree. She started out her career as a journalist, so she certainly knows how to spin, you know, and she did that wonderfully for the Bush administration. But, you know, a PR can only take you so far, and as was just said, that our policies abroad are inciting a lot of the mistrust and dislike and hatred for Americans, and you know, certainly we need to engage in communications that better serve our interests. But to pick someone who really has no grounding in the Middle East, who, as was stated, does not speak the language, has no particular background, to me, that doesn't necessarily put a face on diplomacy that would lend itself, that we're trying to understand them better. I just think it's more of the same cronyism, seeing the same old faces over and over and over, shuttled from job to job, and we're supposed to think that that's okay.
And Jeff, I guess that raises the question for me, and this is not a slight to Karen Hughes, because as excuse me, Dr. Berry already suggested, by all accounts, this is a brilliant woman who knows her stuff. Yet to put her in this position raises the question. She admittedly is cut of the same cloth as George Bush, and this is the kind of Texas big stick mentality that many people feel has gotten the United States beyond the partisan question of Republican Democrat. You can lay this to all administrations within the history of the United States, and that is this kind of world police notion of third world countries that has gotten us in the fix we're in today.
And Ed, you asked a seminal question a minute ago. You said, is this the right person? That's a perspective question. She is the right person for President Bush. And I'll tread carefully here, because as we know from her confirmations hearing, she will be listening carefully. But we have to be honest here. What I am concerned about in this new position is that one of her key speech topics is ethics and values. Another is communication. There's no kind of debate. She's smart. She's prepared. She's articulate. My concern is the contribution to the anti-Islamic xenophobic climate that's being created, and some say nurtured and fed in the U.S. right now. Most of us strive to manifest some sort of spirituality in our lives. However, I believe that spiritually personified, and that is sometimes spiritually personified and funneled into religious camps that draw lines that are dangerous. And right now, this whole notion of American culture is what she is going to be in charge of protecting. And that notion of American culture and what that is really scary from time to time.
And the other thing that's kind of interesting about the religion angle, I just have to say that it's as the rise of religion as an influence in politics in our own country continues at a rapid pace, we denounce the Muslim religion and countries that are Muslim and talk about them not having separation between church and state and how their religion is not the right religion. And we have this very chauvinistic idea that everything we do is right, some people in this country, and even particular religions, and demonizing other people around the world. I hope she doesn't carry that attitude into this job.
I'm just not sure, Yvonne, how we get around, and again, this is not partisan by any means. This is the true ugly American syndrome, how we get around what Mary just suggested there. And that is, as Colin Powell tried to suggest to this administration, that you have to take a look in a new and different way in dealing with people who don't serve and don't see the same ideology you do.
Well, I think that's indicative of how this administration has dealt with a series of issues. I think we need to even step back a little further. Bush, you know, didn't just come into office out of a vacuum. People actually voted for him, not once, but twice. And we can debate the
twice.
Well, we can debate that. But I mean, in terms of him being here, it's not like he was just plucked. So we have to acknowledge there are a lot of Americans who share these ideals, that they believe in that American culture is superior to that of other countries, and they are fundamentally of the thought that Christianity is fundamentally superior to Islam or any other religion. And I think with that type of prevailing mindset, you're going to have a real problem going into other countries and talking about equity, equality, or any semblance of those two value systems, because it rings false. That anyone who reads a paper, gets on the internet, and sees our right-wing fundamentalists talking about their issues, then how can they then on the next go around and tell someone else to talk about Shahara or something else? It just doesn't ring true. And I think Jeff made a point. Certainly Karen Hughes is a great representative for the Bush administration, but I don't know if she's a great representative for America if, in fact, our charge is to go there and to, provide a different type of face or a different understanding to the Islamic world.
All right, Yvonne Bino, Jeff Abafmikar, and Dr. Mary Frances Berry, I thank you all very much. We were trying to get to the Payola scandal that's come out against the Sony Corporation, but we'll do that on Friday. Not that Payola is anything new, but we figured we'd stick with this in terms of the importance of it.
Everything from doctors getting gifts to placement in the stores and the bookstores and everything else. There's Payola everywhere.
All of the above. All right, guys, thanks very much.